It's 1900 UTC, and that means it's time for That's News to Me. I'm your host, DJ Marcus. Let's see what's happening in the world today.
Oh man, you know, we almost had a perfect week. Almost. So close. And then today happened. I have had back-to-back meetings all day, and there's nothing quite like having to explain yourself to two or three managers in a row. So, great fun. But let's go ahead and launch com. Just type com, hit G for go to, and then go to on radio. Hit enter, and you are in the room. And wouldn't you know, comm's looking pretty clean in Anon Radio Land. We got Jazzmaz, myself, Ratsu, Tobe, and X1, at least listed in the listing here. So, woo! Alright, so it is Friday. I was going to read out of The Guardian, but like I said yesterday, it was from August 21st, so I think that my mail's a little bit backed up. But we'll get there. We'll get there. We're just going to go through and check out some news. Today is not going to be super structured. So first up, we're going to start with some domestic news, and we'll work our way backwards, and life will be good. So something that's interesting is Kroger workers. So Kroger is a grocery store chain in the U.S. here, and the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission is an independent agency of the federal government, and it's suing the grocery chain Kroger, alleging that two employees were fired because they refused to wear aprons bearing a rainbow heart. The women believed that the emblem endorsed LGBTQ values and that wearing it would violate their religious beliefs. The suit alleges that the company violated Title VII of the Civil Rights Act, which bans religious discrimination in employment. The two people, Brenda Lawson and Trudy Rickard, worked at a Kroger store in Conway, Arkansas, near Little Rock. They have sincerely held religious beliefs that homosexuality is a sin, according to the complaint. Kroger introduced the apron with a rainbow heart in April 2019, and all employees were required to wear it. It's actually unclear from the suit if the heart was a symbol of the LGBTQ plus community. The paper notes, so it's not clear if it was, but both employees refused to wear it, and they were terminated. So this is an interesting space. Because we kind of see that where corporations try and endorse different things, like they'll try and endorse the like Black Lives Matter or, you know, LGBTQ plus community or something like that, and it's like, oh, you know what? Guess what? You can't force employees to do stuff. So anyway, I just thought this was an interesting turn or twist. I hope it's withheld or upheld, so that way we can ensure that workers are not forced to comply with their employer's beliefs. So that's kind of cool. So let's keep on rolling. No, we're not going to support anybody. Sorry, it's just, I shouldn't say sorry so much, but anyway, I'm just bouncing around. My food was delivered late. It's waiting for me in the other room, so I've got, my mind is all over the place. Oh, well, I hope you enjoy your new religion, X1. That's good. It's important to follow your heart. So, coming from Rewire News, this is kind of a salacious title, a very interesting title anyway. Why making sex work legal would help in the COVID-19 fight. So, the criminalization, over-policing, and mass incarceration of poor black and brown communities in the U.S. is a familiar tale in our nation, and sex workers are at the center of it. Add COVID-19 to the mix, and this shameful history becomes not just an injustice, but for many, a death sentence. So, in 1989, a group of black women in New Orleans decided they wanted to put an end to marginalized communities' exclusion from conversations about issues that hit their communities the hardest. HIV, AIDS-related health issues were the impetus for that activism, which led to the creation of our organization, Women with a Vision. So, Some 30 years later, we face another public health crisis, this time with a different virus, that once again hits our most marginalized communities the hardest, revealing the white supremacy, patriarchy, and homophobia are still at work to silence and exclude marginalized voices. So the article goes on. It's about four times longer than what I've read, and kind of goes into the details about like why. But I found this to be very interesting, very entertaining, because it's kind of this this position where, what is this? What's going on? Oh, sorry. The metadata was funky, so I got confused. Anyway, life is good. Sex work is real work, and I support this, so I thought that was cool. Mother Jones has another story. Today is going to be a little spicy, I guess. But this one is from Mother Jones. It was still dark outside when Veronica Perez arrived at Prime Farms, a nut packing facility in Kern County, California. Crickets murmured from the almond and pistachio groves stretching for miles in either direction. Inside the double doors, Perez, 43, usually stands next to other nut sorters alongside a conveyor belt. This is very serious. Sorry. It's just funny. Nut sorters alongside a conveyor belt and picks out the unseemly pistachios. But on June 25th at 4:30 a.m., Perez didn't go inside. Instead, for the next 5 hours, she and her colleagues formed a picket line. Some 30 employees joined on foot, with more circling and honking in their cars. They held homemade signs with the names of their infected coworkers. One sign in Spanish read, "The wise see danger and leave, but the foolish go on and suffer the consequences." The employees chanted, "Somos esenciales. We are essential." In more than a decade of picking and packing food in California, Perez had never joined a protest. There hadn't been many to join. Fewer than 2% of farm workers are unionized, but in recent months, things at Primex had become unbearable. In March, when employees concerned about the coronavirus requested masks, Primex allegedly prohibited them from doing so, citing food safety concerns. When the company later allowed masks, instead of distributing them, it sold them for $8 apiece. By early June, employees were falling ill. Those who stayed home sick reported not getting paid while they were out. Others kept coming to work, coughing and coughing. Meanwhile, Primex executives reportedly remained tight-lipped on any illness at their facility. They said they were going to let us know if anyone came down with it, said maintenance worker, but they didn't. Ramigo Ramirez, but they didn't. When Ramirez told his boss in June that he wasn't feeling good, the supervisor said we were short-staffed and needed more hands. It was probably just the flu, said the supervisor, urging Ramirez to take some medicine and come in. A few days later, he was diagnosed with COVID-19. He stayed home, quarantining himself in his bedroom. When I got up the next day, I didn't see anyone. Not my wife, not my daughters, he said, and I thought to myself, what's happening? Did they leave me alone? But no, each one was in their room, sick. So yeah, so this is just sad news. And Primex continues to just, well, most food processing places continue to operate like that. So don't worry, if you haven't gotten COVID-19 yet, the people who are processing your cheap food that you're going to eat will. And then they'll just cough and spice up all of your nuts and fruits and berries and everything else that you love. And, you know, I mean, it's not like we could prevent any of this from happening. Let's keep on rolling. We don't want to get too worked up. I can feel it. I can feel it. My blood working up. It's getting up there. Well, you know what? You know what that means? It means it's like it's happening. I can feel.
I want to hear the music.
I know, dude. You know, we're gonna get there. Let's do one more story. Keep on thinking about the workers. For the last several years, this is from progressive.org. For the last several years, China's Xinjiang region has been home to one of the world's most horrifying ongoing human rights abuses. More than 1 million Uyghurs, Kazakhs, and other largely Muslim minorities have been forcibly detained in re-education camps, where laborers are forced to work under slave-like conditions to produce goods that major American companies like Nike, Apple, and Gap rely on in their supply chain. Yeah, it's pretty sad. And it's like, we don't even make them, like, we don't hardly pay them anything either. That's the problem. Just an anecdote. Taco Bell, a fast food chain, had an exclusive contract with some growers in Florida for their tomatoes. And whenever he, or what happened was, the workers were striking. They wanted more pay. And it would have cost them like 1 penny per bushel or something like that to give them higher raises or give them higher wages and health care. And they fought and they refused to do that until there was a strike and they were forced to. So don't for a minute think that any of these corporations give one shit about you. That's just from me to you. Anyway, so back to it. Our good outstanding American companies are using slave labor in China. The abuses in Xinjiang in many ways highlight how global capitalists are willing to look the other way on human rights violations when they translate to reliable access to cheap labor and resources. And while there have been many suggestions on how to hold multinational companies accountable for profiting off the repression, many of them have relied on voluntary corporate promises or codes of conduct. But there's one new legal avenue which takes aim at companies that rely on coerced labor that seems to be making headway. And yeah, good on you, for SMJ, for thinking about where your food comes from. It's really... today is a spicy day. I'm full of the spice. It is flowing hot in my blood. So anyway, on August 28th, the Corporate Accountability Lab, a Chicago-based legal nonprofit, filed a petition in the U.S. Customs and Border Protection... with CBP in conjunction with the AFL-CIO, World Uyghur Congress, and other groups to stop goods from entering via Xinjiang by using an obscure portion of the 1930 Tariff Act, Section 307. On September 14th, that petition was approved, barring companies from importing goods from Xinjiang into the U.S. if those goods were produced with forced labor. Section 307 prohibits the importation of goods to the United States that are produced in any way by forced labor. For almost all of its existence, however, the code was ineffectual because of a provision waiving the ban if there was insufficient domestic production of the goods in question. CBP has only invoked Section 307 a handful of times in the first 86 years of the code's existence, but in the past 4 years, Cal has worked with other groups to steadily increase the number. So, this is kind of good news. It doesn't address the problem that, or the, you know, the kind of reality that our current modern world relies on forced labor or slave labor all around the world. And in the U.S., you know, we have tons of prisons that force people to work in our call centers and sew stuff and it's just all over the place. So don't ever think that your country is better than the other one, because yeah, you probably coercing someone somewhere somehow. That's how capitalism works, baby. You gotta extract wealth from somebody. And if you're not careful, it's gonna be you. God bless America. We're gonna play a song because clearly I've gotten way too angry and political, and we need to chill out. So we're gonna do that. So I'm gonna grab here. Here we go. This is a song that I like. It's fast, and I don't think has a cool message. This is called All of Me from NoFX, and I know NoFX is lame now, and I know that they're sold out and Fat Mike is problematic, but this song still gets in my head sometimes, so I'm going to play it for you.
I want to hear the music. Goodbye.
You're listening to Anon Radio, powered by SDF Public Access Unix System.
That's right. You are listening to Anon Radio. This is news to me. Today is a little bit off the rails. I am just going all over the place. But you know what? That's okay. Because it's Friday, September 18th, 2020. And we're just having a good time. It is 1918, 1919 coming up. And that means that the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe is coming up in just a few minutes. And we got to go to Heron Haven yesterday. And today, there's Diurnal Rabbit Recon. It's going to be amazing. So, watch out. Diurnal Rabbits. That means daytime. It's pretty exciting. Friday. And Tobe, of course, is Monday through Monday, just every day of the week. So, strap in. Buckle up, buddy. All right, so now it's time.
World news.
Now let's talk about some world news. Because that is what we're all about. So this one is pretty cool. BBC is reporting this. Thai National Park is sending rubbish back to tourists. So if you litter in this Thai National Park, your rubbish may just come back to haunt you. So, well, not exactly haunt, but it'll be shipped to your home as a pointed reminder that when out in nature, you'd better clean up after yourself. Authorities in the popular Khao Yai National Park near Bangkok will start sending rubbish back to litterers, Thailand's environmental minister said. Offenders will also be registered with the police. Visitors to the park have to register their address, making it easy for rangers to track them down if they leave rubbish behind. Environment Minister Varwat Silpa Arka posted pictures of litter collected in cardboard parcels ready to be shipped on his Facebook account. Your trash, we'll send it back to you, the post warns, reminding people that littering in a national park is an offense and punishable with up to 5 years in prison and hefty fines. Along with empty bottles, cans, and chip wrappings, the box in the Facebook post contains a polite note saying, you forgot these things at Khao Yai National Park. So this will be very interesting. It'd be cool if they adopted that in the U.S. because, holy moly, are Americans trashy. Trash generators, anyway. Okay, so then we've got here something from... Everything is U.S., so it's very hard sometimes. There we go. Sorry, it's hard to sort my tabs. Guardian has a story here. The island of Guafo sits on a route taken by blue whales heading into the fjords of Chilean Patagonia. It's a hot spot for marine biodiversity, home to rare flora, and sacred to the indigenous Mapuche people. And now it's up for sale. The 50,000-acre island has been offered on the Jet Set property market for a cool $20 million, prompting outrage amongst activists and reigniting a debate in Chile over private ownership versus national patrimony. The online advert at Private Island Inc. says the island boasts more than 44 miles of coastline and provides a home to a diverse array of flora and fauna. That flora includes a rare Congonilla tree species, and the fauna, particularly the marine variety, is nothing short of spectacular, including blue, humpback, sei, and southern right whales, as well as orcas and dolphins. Environmentalists and local indigenous people are exasperated that the island's 83-square-mile expanse and its waters, save for a lighthouse manned by the Chilean Navy, are being offered to the highest bidder. The island is an entry point to the Gulf of Corcovado, which is the most important feeding ground for blue and humpback whales on Chilean coasts, says Jacqueline Montesinos, head of the Marine Diversity Conservation at the World Wildlife Fund. Yeah, it goes on to explain why this is such an important piece of land and why it's so bad that they're just letting people have it, or they're going to sell it. Okay, this is something maybe a little more mellow. This is more about sports, but it wasn't COVID related, so it helps my heart rate get down. A nurse is told a German court of her role in a sports blood doping scam. So a nurse, one of the co-defendants in the trial of a German sports doctor accused of masterminding an international blood doping network, described on Friday how she helped athletes dope with illicit blood transfusion. Sports physician Mark Schmidt, 42, and four co-defendants who allegedly aided him stand trial in Munich, accused of helping at least two dozen athletes undergo blood transfusions to boost performance. So far, 23 athletes, mainly skiers and cyclists from 8 countries, are known to be involved. If found guilty, Schmidt and his co-defendants face jail for up to 10 years under anti-doping legislation introduced in Germany in 2015. So, one of the accused, named only as Diana S., told the court how she first helped Schmidt in December 2017 when she traveled to Dobbiaco, Italy, to administer a blood transfusion before a skiing competition. Blood doping is aimed at boosting the number of red blood cells, which allow the body to transport more oxygen to muscles, thereby increasing stamina and performance. So, this is pretty wild. Welcome, Red Hat, to Calm. So, that's kind of neat. Let's keep on a rolling. No, we covered that already. Some of these sites, it's like they just rearrange their headlines and call it a day. And it's like, that's not right. I'm reading these news Monday through Friday. At 1900 UTC. Sorry, I started reading Calm. Calm is a dangerous place. You start reading, and then you're lost. You're sucked in. All of a sudden, you're playing Tetris. You don't even know how you got there. Welcome, Adam D. You're almost in time for Dubious Goals Committee. So, let's do this. Let's talk about a couple of other stories that I am interested in. This is going to just kind of go wherever I want to go. We're not going to have...
It's time for tech news.
Yeah, it's gonna be time for that. It's also
that one.
We're just gonna go all over the place. So let's go and start right here. TikTok and WeChat. U.S. is gonna ban the app download in 48 hours. So be sure you download it today. Basically, the Department of Commerce said it would bar people in the U.S. from downloading the messaging and video sharing apps through any app store on any platform. The Trump administration says the companies threaten national security and could pass user data to China. But China and both companies deny this. WeChat will effectively shut down in the U.S. on Sunday, but people will still be able to use TikTok until November 12th, when it could also be fully banned. TikTok said it was disappointed in the order and disagreed with the Commerce Department, saying it already committed to unprecedented levels of additional transparency in light of the administration's concerns. We'll continue to challenge the unjust executive order, which was enacted without due process and threatens to deprive American people and small businesses across the U.S. of a significant platform for both a voice and livelihood. Tencent, I know, right? Tencent, the owner of WeChat, 1E, not 2, said the announcement restrictions were unfortunate, but said they would continue talks with the government to achieve a long-term solution. So this is very sad indeed because, you know, Donald Trump is a despot and we need to be careful. All right. So this is something that came from August, but we didn't talk about it. So I wanted to mention it real quick. And that's that the U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said he wants a clean internet. And what he means by that is he wants to remove Chinese influence and Chinese companies from the internet in the U.S. But critics believe this will bolster a worrying movement towards breaking up the global internet. The so-called splinternet is generally used when talking about China and more recently Russia. The idea is that there's nothing inherent or preordained about the internet being global. The governments that want to control what people see on the internet, it makes sense to take ownership of it. The Great Firewall of China is the best example of a nation putting up the internet equivalent of a wall around itself. You won't find a Google search engine or Facebook in China. What people didn't expect was that the U.S. might follow China's lead. Yet critics believe that is corollary of Mr. Pompeo's statement on Thursday. So it's pretty freaking ridiculous, right? But whatever. We got about 3 minutes to go before the Dubious Goals Committee and my lunch. I am pretty excited about it. Let's just go over here. Let's jump through. Let's pull up some news that I didn't talk about yesterday. Oh my gosh, guys. I am so hungry. All right. You know what? I don't even feel like it. We're going to play a song, and we're going to play a funk song. We're going to play... Oh, here we go. You know what? I don't even do that. Thanks so much for listening. This was news to me. I've just kind of been chilling, vibing today. But we're going to play some music, you know?
I want to hear the music.
Before we jump out of here. You know what? All right. So we searched for funk. And we got Simon and Garfunkel. I guess that's what's going to happen. This is The Times Are Changing. And we'll see you on Monday. This song won't make it all the way through before Tobe starts up. Thanks for tuning in. See you Monday, Ratsu. Thank you so much for tuning in, SMJ. You guys all rule. Appreciate you very much.
If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you sink like a stone. For the times, they are a changing. Of writers and critics who prophesize with your pen, and keep your eyes wide, the chance won't come again. And don't speak too soon, for the wheel's still in spin, and there's no telling who that is naming. All the losing now will be later to win, for the times, they are a changing. Come senators, congressmen, please heed the call. Don't stand in the doorway, don't block up the hall. For he that gets hurt will be he that has stalled. The battle outside raging will soon shake your wind.